This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
People are strange, aren't they?
This
will mean nothing
others.
To the podcast listeners. We're just listening to people are strange. People are strange, but I tell you who's not strange. Amanda Redman, lovely
Hi.
Producer. Hi, Amanda. How are you?
Oh, not too bad, Lucy. Thank you.
Very good. And we've got the lovely Robin Perkins. Hello.
Hi.
Robin Perkins has turned up on her pink bike, which we're going to talk about, I would imagine, at length during the show.
And I think we might even bring it in.
Let's do that. We can all do wheelies around the studio. That'd be great. There's so much space in here.
How much is insurance do you guys have?
None, but that makes it all the more fun. Okay, I'm sure.
We actively encourage that, yes.
Oh, dear. So, yes, it's 2 hours. Me and Robin will be here for the first bit, and then the lovely Abby Burdis is going to come and join us. Got lots of stuff to talk about. Yet again, this 2 hours represents a beautiful oasis of calm, tranquility, peace and joy in my life. I've had one of those days that I was running around. I've been up since 6 o'clock this morning and I've had a lot of things to do, and I was thinking, this is one of those days where my life feels like a film, but a really shit film. It's one of those films about a woman who's trying to have it all. She's a girl around London and she's rushing here and there. What is she doing? Does anybody care? Like one of those films, you'd be watching it going, oh, why is Kate Beckinsale doing this? She's really good. She must have a tax bill or something. I had to go and buy an outfit for my daughter's Christmas concert. I had to go and see a lawyer. I had to have a meeting. So I've done all these sort of like different things.
You really have got it all, haven't you?
I really have got, and I had a smear test. So, I mean,
wow.
My God, it's like
wow.
The modern woman.
Green, I'm as green as Robin's shirt with envy.
Yes.
Yeah, Robin's shirt is green. That's exactly what it is. It's like, you know what today was missing? A smear test.
Yes. The cherry on an otherwise shit cake. This is going to be lovely. I have seen no reason why this isn't going to be the best 2 hours of my day. And indeed, dear listener,
even better than a smear test. Come on.
Well, I've raised the bar pretty high there, but yeah. In fact, I probably had more of an audience for the smear test than we're going to have tonight. It was one of those where she said to me,
can some students come in and watch?
Yeah, she imagined some people coming and watch. And I was like, yeah, no, that's fine. And then the door opened and they trooped, like hundreds. It was like, this is not, my vagina is not a tourist attraction. Thank you very much.
Wow.
I don't know. Some of them weren't even medical professionals, I'm fairly sure. They were just gawpers, rubberneckers.
As long as they didn't bring out a video camera, I think you're fine.
Yes. At that point, to be honest, all dignity was surrendered. I wouldn't have minded stick it on YouTube. We were away last week and... do you know, two people emailed me to say how much they've missed us.
More than one?
So upwards of two people are delighted that we're back.
Woo!
I was hosting the Anglia Water We Love What You Do Awards in Peterborough. So that was my very important... I couldn't miss that. Couldn't miss a Wednesday night out in Peterborough, guys. You understand that, right? So thank you for the people who wrote to say that they've missed us. We're back now. I mean, I presume there were more people who missed us, but they were just sort of quiet about it. They're probably now just clutching their radios or laptops in quiet delight, just weeping with gratitude at the fact that we're back on. So hello to you. Hello to everybody. Now, Amanda, should we start off with our record of the week? It's a record by a lady.
It's a lady with a colour in her name.
It's pink.
And I thought a fitting track to start off with. Can you guess?
Am I just like a pill, or am I coming up? So let's get this party started.
Yeah,
I am coming up. This is all. I think I'm coming down. If anything, pink.
Friends.
Lucy Porter on FUBAR Radio.
Oh, we've come up now. Thanks, Pink. I've fully come up. I've got that lovely tingly feeling of anticipation. Not that I've ever taken drugs, but I tell you what. Now, Robin and I were just talking about whether we drink booze. I just got the cocktail cabinet out. So I set up the cocktail cabinet for our second hour of the show where we start drinking. And Robin said, jealous. Oh, no, I can't drink. I can't drink. And I was like, is this medical? I'm always interested in why people can't drink. There's often an interesting story, isn't there, of, you know, wild youth or medication. But you aren't drinking for a reason that I fully applaud. Tell the listeners why, Robin.
I'm on stage later.
Yeah. Professionalism.
Exactly. I'm trying. It's professionalism.
It is bloody professionalism. You're professional to your core.
And I'm a lightweight now. I've actually turned into a lightweight. I can't even, like, outside of when I do drink, which I do as frequently as I can. In fact, I had a bottle of wine on Monday night.
Oh, because I love just hearing to myself. Americans talk about what they think is heavy drinking. It's so cute. So adorable. Like, I had a whole bottle of wine to myself. Like, yeah.
What, for breakfast?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if it was before midday, then I might judge you.
Because it's like, oh, Monday's my weekend, and some housemate and my boyfriend. And it's a new boyfriend. It's very exciting. And it was weird that I just said that. Nice. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, they were like, yeah, it's Monday. We have real jobs. We're not drinking. So I was like, screw you all. I am drinking a bottle of wine by myself.
The Shiraz.
I'm
Watch
doing
out for
it.
Me.
Polish it off. Down. But anyway, but yeah, no, so I'm gigging tonight. And if I have like a half a glass of wine, I'm just nothing.
I know. Well, the regular listener may find this hard to believe, given that I often crack open something on air. But I can broadcast under the influence. But yeah, live gigs, never touch a bloody drop.
Yeah.
Because you do feel, it's that thing of live performance where you just think, if anything went wrong, you are in charge. It is like driving. I think it's like driving a car, doing a... especially when you're emceeing, as you are tonight. In fact, let's plug Robin's gig tonight, because people might be listening now and they might be thinking, they've heard Pink, they're all excited, they're thinking, I've come up, but I've nowhere to go. But if they're in the Clapham Junction area, or even any mainline train station in the southeast, really.
Yeah, anywhere.
Then you could get to Clapham Junction.
Just south of the river. I know, anywhere.
And it's the brilliant Carl Donnelly. It's the venue is, it's on Lavender Rise in Battersea. What's the name of the bar?
The Four Thieves.
The Four Thieves.
It actually just won Time Out's best bar in Battersea.
Sexy. Very nice. It used to be the site of Battersea Jonglers. So comedy is in the bloody walls of it, isn't it? It's absolutely steeped in comic tradition. Oh, so many of us have died at that club. when that was... I remember there was one night where... when it was Battersea Jonglers. Not now that it is your lovely club, which is called...
Laugh Train Home.
Laugh Train Home. See, lovely name. When it was Battersea Jonglers, Jesus. There was some. There was one night where I was on with Stephen K. Amos, and a section of the audience started quite ferociously racially abusing Stephen. And it massively, massively kicked off. But they were really hard to get to, you know, like where there's a really full room and then they were sort of in the corner. So it was like a really slow motion chase where the bouncers were trying to get them out, sort of chasing them round the room. And I can't even remember who. I wasn't on, but I was enjoying the spectacle. It used to be a tough club. Now it's a delight. And there's an added inducement for people who are thinking, do I want to leave the house on a cold night? There is free alcohol.
Yes.
We're sitting here because...
I know. Sound of
every
the door slamming behind us.
I think Laura and Neve have just left the room.
You can have a free pint, you can have a free gin and tonic, and you can see the masterful Carl Donnelly.
Yes.
I've forgotten who the others are, but they're both good.
Matt Ewins and Nick Dixon.
Yeah, you see. Very good. Very good lineup.
So,
you should go. Anyway, you'll be going soon, so let's not waste time talking about where you're going to. Let's talk to you about now. I was going to set up a list of the week, or a question of the week for our listeners, based on... Now, I've been out all day, as we established, doing very important things, but I was watching on Twitter the reaction to the Chancellor's autumn statement. And the fact that John McDonnell stood up and brandished a copy of Chairman Mao's Little Red Book at George Osborne. And I can't quite get my head around. Did either of you see this this afternoon?
Unfortunately,
I can't
not.
Get my head around what was going on here. But it seems to have been a kind of apparently the group meetings were held, and they decided in the Labour Party front bench that this would be a brilliant idea. This would be hilarious. I tell you what, would be funny, guys. Right, after George Osborne has done his speech, what we'll do is we'll read from Chairman Mao's little red book, and then throw it at him. And now I have no idea what the thinking behind this was, but anyway, it appears to be being universally, even with my Twitter, which is like, my Twitter is full of lefties and, you know, namby-pamby muesli knitting Guardian readers, and even they are saying this was a terrible, terrible, you know, publicity stunt or political stunt that backfired. So I thought our list of the week could be, have you ever tried to do something funny at work that has massively backfired?
That's
on you.
A good one.
Because, and obviously, I set this up because I have stories of this. And you would think, being Lucy, you're a stand up comedian, surely anything funny you try and do at work is hilarious. Yes. But before I did stand up, I used to work in an office. I used to work for Granada Television. And I remember one year for the Christmas dinner, we all got driven in a coach to a lovely restaurant in the Peak District. Very expensive, lovely restaurant.
And you went all the way to the Peak District?
Only from Manchester.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's all right then. Yeah, we've got restaurants in London too.
Everyone lives in London, Amanda.
Sorry?
Just in. I know.
Okay, if you say so.
We'll cover that in the second hour, don't worry. I'll talk you through it. But so we went to this lovely restaurant, and me and a colleague decided we were going to do a hilarious kind of opening speech, and I'd already started doing comedy at this stage, so the pressure was on me to be amusing. And me and my colleague Robin had written what we thought was a hilarious sort of roast of our bosses.
Okay.
And oh,
what could possibly go wrong here?
Sweet baby Jesus, it was the most butt-clenching, horrific thing, because I mean, at that stage I was very new to comedy. And I hadn't really grasped the concept of working a room, or also of being able to back out of something. Once you've started on something, you don't need to carry on if you're not working.
Step away.
You change direction, you change tactic. But at that stage, like, you know, I was quite nervous, and we'd written this thing, and it was meant to be really funny, and like, why is it not working? And we accused one of the bosses of being a massive lech, which he was. But I mean, you don't say that. You don't say bad things about your boss at a Christmas party, and you particularly don't do it if you are in a restaurant in the middle of the countryside and your only way back to civilization is on the coach that you all have to share.
Wow.
And it was an oh my gosh, yeah. So that was an afternoon of then. I think I hid in the toilets for about as long as I, you know, like I did about half an hour in the toilet.
Oh my gosh.
With other people coming in, going, you're going to have to come out at some point. So that was really pretty bad.
Yeah.
So if our dear listeners would like to tweet in or email or, you know, in any way get in touch or just think about it. Just think about it.
Just think about it in your own mind.
That's just a thing I thought we could throw out there. The interesting thing from the Autumn Statement, of course, from a women's point of view or from our point of view on this show, is we have been banging on, Robin, about the tampon tax for weeks now. And so they've done quite an interesting thing. George Osborne has said that he's going to take the money raised by the tampon tax, the luxury VAT tax on sanitary items, and spend it on women's charities and women's issues, which is actually, I hate to say, quite a good sort of shrewd political move, because it is like, well, you know, you ladies, you're paying the money, you can have it back.
It's stuff that was being funded by the government anyway, isn't it? So it's not really,
there's not extra money.
It's not extra. I actually tweeted George Osborne about 2 months ago, which I thought was a brilliant idea. And if you insist on keeping the luxury tax, then why not use the money to supply the same items of sanitary items to people in women in war-torn countries and refugees.
Nice. Yeah.
He ignored that, didn't he?
Do you know, he never gets back to
charities
me
begins
either.
At home, doesn't it?
It does.
Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I ever have tweeted him. I've never written to. I have occasionally tweeted politicians, but they do tend to. Well, Enda Kenny, the Irish Taoiseach, who we had Gráinne Maguire on last time, because she similarly period related, she was tweeting him about her period. So I've tweeted him a couple of times now about my period.
Have you?
Nothing back.
Wow.
I thought, you know,
it's rude, isn't it?
To be honest, I was like, well, fair enough, Gráinne's not getting a response, but I mean, he's not going to be able to ignore me, right? You know, I am like English, so. You know, he's one of his own. Yeah, he's ignoring that, but no, nothing.
Wow.
Nothing back. So, and I mean, obviously, the tax credit U-turn may help women, but then they seem to be taking with one hand, giving back with another, taking away again with another one. They've got loads of hands.
They do, don't they? They've got more than their fair share of hands.
But anyway, we may dissect that further when I've actually seen when I've actually seen footage and read more about it. Other things that I wanted to talk about today, a little anniversary of Grace Darling. I just thought this was quite a nice one to start with, because we do on this show like to talk about women who've inspired us, have a woman of the week, and I thought Grace Darling would be a good woman of the week. Now, Robin, have you heard of Grace Darling? It's not a quiz. It's not a quiz.
I know. Okay. So no.
No, you're absolutely at liberty to say that.
Okay.
I can't imagine that the legend of Grace Darling will have reached America. So it's the 200th anniversary of Grace Darling's birth. It was on the 24th of November this week. And she was an English lighthouse keeper's daughter, famed for participating in the rescue of survivors from the shipwrecked Forfarshire.
That just rolls off the tongue.
I tell you what, it's a good job I haven't started drinking yet, isn't it? Forfarshire in 1838. It was a paddle steamer that ran aground on the Farne Islands off the coast of Northumberland in northeast England. 9 members of her crew were saved thanks to Grace Darling. And she was like, just an early heroine of mine, because the children's television programme Blue Peter used to do features on Grace Darling.
This is, I think, an early
sort of nod to the fact, well, we need more good female heroic role models. And so they used to, it was about once a month.
I was going to say, this is Darling. How I'm aware of Grace Darling. It's through Blue Peter.
Because you'd always get, like, you know, Janet Ellis or whoever the presenter was.
Yeah.
Pretending to be Grace Darling.
That's
wearing
right.
a big hat.
That's right.
And rowing a boat somewhere.
That's
in
right.
So she's a captain of the...
No, she was just a lighthouse keeper's daughter. That sounds like the beginning of a dirty song. She was the lighthouse keeper's daughter. And her light was very bright. Whatever it is she had to do, she kept the sailors up all night.
Whee!
Anyway, I'm sure she wasn't dirty. But so she was just a simple girl who decided to take action in a time of crisis.
Why did the boat crash?
Well, it's been a bit sort of rocky around there.
I think so. I think that they did quite a lot. Yeah, I think it was just kind of one of the perils.
I mean, it does suggest that her father, the lighthouse keeper, hadn't really been doing his job.
Mm. Yeah, I'm just wondering if...
Look at the American coming in here going...
I know, I'm like, has somebody investigated that? Did she... Like, basically, it was her dad just drunk, passed out, didn't turn the light on, and she's like, I gotta cover up for this guy.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then
yeah.
ran out there and saved 9 people, which doesn't make her any less of a heroine. I'm just saying,
it kind of does,
she may have been covering up for her dad who didn't do his job. I don't know.
Well,
mopping up after him.
She did well out of it. As news of her role in the rescue reached the public, her combination of bravery and simple virtue set her out as exemplary.
Simple virtue. That means
simple virtue. It's
there couldn't
I aspire
be a dirty
to.
Song about her.
So subscriptions and donations totaling over £700 were raised for her, including £50 from Queen Victoria. It's not much.
Yeah. What year was this? A bit rubbish.
This was in, the actual thing was 1838. Even in 1838, you could have risen to more. I mean, 50 quid, I'd sponsor people that for, you know, running a half marathon. Not even a marathon.
Not even a whole one.
Wow, you. My year's 2 quid.
Big charity
have
spender.
A good run.
That's just my little way of sneaking in how much I do for charity there.
Well, I just even know.
No, it's normally £2. Like,
okay.
Yeah. But you know, I'm not queen. I mean, I'm not queen.
No, it's true. She probably has... a lot more.
She had a lot more than that. Yeah. She had an empire at her disposal.
That's true. She could have gotten like an island. That's what she should have gotten.
She should have. She got a silver teapot. But yeah, so she became a sort of huge celebrity at the time. And thanks to the work of Blue Peter, a whole generation of women like Amanda and I remember her. And thanks to us, a whole generation of North Americans are being one North American is being enlightened about the story of Grace Darling. It's a nice celebratory.
That's nice
story. Yeah. Nice story. I've got quite a few nice stories tonight because the sort of global political landscape is so relentlessly bleak,
grim.
I thought, well, let's try and cheer it up a little bit.
Yeah,
we're going to try and raise the spirits of the nation.
I like it.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah. Speaking of which, shall we have Robin's?
Yeah.
Now this is brilliant, and I'm delighted that you've chosen this. So, crack on with your record, Robin. Tell us all about it and why you've chosen it.
You just
like it?
I just really like it. Nelly Furtado, I think, is great. It's great to dance to, or it's a versatile song.
It is. You can do almost anything. What shall we do in studio?
Wheelies on the bike. I thought we would arrange it, yeah?
I mean, it is called Big Hoops, so, I mean, like, this
Big Hoops.
Yeah.
There it is. I'll just make sure I do press the right button. Yes.
You're 100% right, done it. Chris. Time release the fresh.
Yeah.
I tell you what, we've been having tweets right, left and centre.
I tell you what, just read out one though.
Okay, let's just read out one. Good idea. Ricky Rock, thank you Ricky Rock for getting in touch, saying broadcasting while drunk is good because it makes drunk people listening to the show feel less inferior. Anything for my audience, Ricky. That's what I do. Anything at all. I will crack open a tin in a minute. No, I feel we've got to discuss the main story of the day or week. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be remiss of us to ignore it. Who knows what's forming in your minds, listeners, but the story I'm referring to is just... I'll tell you why it's the main story of the week, because, again, the... Two people said they were missing the show, which was nice. And two people, unprecedented numbers, also texted me and tweeted me to say, have you seen this story? And I'm almost insulted that they think this is within our purview. It very much is. It's the story about a woman who is making sourdough bread. Lovely sourdough bread. Do you love sourdough bread?
Yeah, I do, but I can see the headline,
can't you?
I do like sourdough bread.
It's very much of the now, isn't it? It's the it's what you put your avocado on. I mean, I was an early adopter of the avocado. I've been into avocado since.
Oh no, I love avocado.
Yeah,
it's phenomenal. But
now it's sourdough toast with avocado. That's the thing.
Really?
Yeah,
sounds delicious.
Out of the loop.
It does sound lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. Pork. It's everyone's going to be talking about it. So, but yes, there's a woman who's making sourdough bread, and she's making it with her vaginal yeast.
There you go.
Right, should we move on? That's done.
There's nothing else to talk about here.
I think that this was kind of my area. Not something I have or would do, but it was the interesting thing about this story is there is a blogger, Stavers, who, you know, she's outspoken, she's a great tweeter, you know, she's not afraid of controversy, and oh my God, she's walked into controversy this week because she decided to blog about the fact that she had a yeast infection. Right, I might actually need a drink to talk about this. So she's had a yeast infection.
It's quite a difficult story to read.
It's quite
isn't
a
it?
Difficult story to Amanda.
That's the way you take it back.
She went there. So anyway, she had a yeast infection, and she thought, in a very natural train of thought, what would happen if I used this yeast as starter yeast for my sourdough bread? And then she decided to, you know, and I, you know, fair enough. She had that thought. She acted on it. She's a, you know, go getter. And so she's
go getter.
So anyway, yeah. I
guess
like,
why? I mean, can you not afford the 50p that is yeast? Is this a cost saving mechanism? Is it because she likes the taste of vagina and thought, you know what would make sourdough bread taste better? Vagina.
Well, it's not going to taste of vagina, Robin, is it? I mean, it's going to taste of.
Some men like it.
Some men do like the taste. Some women like it.
Some women like it. Yeah. Some people like the taste. I don't. I like. But why? I guess I want to know why.
She was curious. The next thing that happened was I was scraping. No, I can't read that. She found a method to introduce the yeast into a bowl of flour mixed with water. And the next day, the Frankenstein within me, by Frankenstein, I mean the guy, not the monster. Okay, maybe also the monster, cheered, "It's alive!" It was a few hours after this that people started to get really disgusted. Below is a small sample of comments. My little home. So anyway, so she's used this yeast to start the bread dough off. Below is a small sample of comments my little home baking project has received so far. This is important, people. Please do not reply to or harass the tweeters. Yeah, because a lot of them have said, you know, they've been quite vocal in their disgust. But they, Stavers points you to her Patreon page where you can sort of, you know, defend her rather than attacking the people who've said... So you dirty bitch, go lob yourself into the Atlantic, please, is the kind of comment that she's been getting. Which you go, I know, it's her body, her choice. She's not making anyone else eat it. But what I found interesting about it, it's obviously, there is a natural visceral reaction to this. But then once you get past that, I think you kind of go, well, it's her business, what she does. But people did get so angry and so upset. But two sort of interesting things were people were saying, oh, is it some kind of feminist thing? But I mean, I don't think it is. I think it is just her curiosity. I don't think she's trying to prove a point about... I mean, we do find women's bodily secretions disgusting, but then... But as many people pointed out, you do also find men's bodily...
Yeah,
if
quite.
If it had been penis yeast, you'd go, now, I'm not sorry. Yeah. I'm not going to have the penis yeast bread either. So I don't think it's really to do with that. But I found it interesting just the level of people's absolute disgust. But what was more interesting to me was the food hygiene discussion that emerged after that, which I genuinely found really interesting. Because you can basically stick anything in bread... And it will die. You can kill it off. I mean, cooking is a powerful way of killing off any yeasties and beasties and bad things that you don't want to eat. It's a very simple message that I'm broadcasting tonight.
But would Mary Berry approve of...
This is an episode of Bake Off that I think we're all absolutely...
I'd be glued to that.
Yeah. Vaginal glue. So, does anyone want to say anything else about this? I feel like it was
I'm
a strong
lost for
start
why.
To the show.
Yeah. I guess just to see if it would work. I guess that's the point, is just to see if it would work.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's yeast, and I suppose she was just like, "Well, will it behave like yeast? Yeast? What is yeast? I don't. I've never really known."
I feel like that's a very extensive trial to go through just to know if it's of the same genus or species of normal yeast.
Are we filing this under too much time on your hands?
There's an element of that, slightly, in my opinion.
Time and other things on your hands, obviously.
Bake bread. I love cooking. I would much rather make pasta from scratch than bread. Much easier.
Yeah.
What else is she going to put in that recipe book, though? Because... I mean, what are those sort of excretions from her body? Is she going to...
Someone else has tweeted and said, yes, exactly, that you do...
But placenta's really good for you. I mean, I've never had it, but in theory it is. I don't know. I've never eaten it.
Isn't it only supposed to be good for you if you've actually given birth to replace stuff that you've lost from giving birth?
Do you know, the idea... So after you've been through labour... And normally you haven't eaten for a couple of days because, you know, you're in labour and it takes a while and, you know, you don't really feel much like it. When you're in searing agony, you don't sort of feel like eating. And then when that comes out, and, I mean, it is not a pretty thing. And the last thing on my mind was, I could tuck into that because there is a hospital canteen to which I dispatched my husband to get me a sandwich. So, I think I do find it very difficult. I'm just not a very... despite my use of the moon cup, that is about as far as I go in kind of hippie, natural womandom.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying I would, but I just thought because there are so many nutrients, I can see the point to it.
Well, menstrual blood. Someone said you can put menstrual blood on plants, houseplants.
I think it's on toast or on your sourdough bread.
Should we just stop? Let's just stop.
It's just dinner time for some people. I feel bad. I really hope nobody's...
We'll cut that out of the podcast. We'll just cut that out.
We'll just forget that what happened.
Yeah, we'll just do something else.
Oh, I have to go in 5 minutes.
Do you know what? I really feel like we've wasted that 5 minutes that we had with you talking about vaginal yeast. So in there,
I'm sorry I'm here so short. A different time I could stay
Next
longer.
Next time you come back and we'll have an update on the... We'll get the bread.
Oh, yeah, God, well, no. I'll tell you what.
Good, I'm washing my hair that day. I'm busy.
You could probably make something out of the dandruff, because isn't that a kind of a... Is that yeasty?
Everything's yeasty.
Everything.
Well, I think if you can sort of culture most things, can't you? Like any... You could do yogurt cultures from... almost anything, because I mean, when my sister was making cheese, vegan cheese, and that you have to be very careful with vegan cheese because it latches onto everything and it tries to make cheese. It just wants to make cheese out of everything in the atmosphere. Let's do something else before you go, Robin.
Yes,
we'll have a very quick.
We don't want this to be the only thing that we've spoken to.
I'll tell you what. Let's talk about this. Is a nice one. Sue Perkins' autobiography is out, and she was talking to Jennifer Saunders about it. And Jennifer Saunders and Sue Perkins were talking about the fact that when Jennifer's double act partner, Dawn French, got married. Hang on. I'm completely screwed that up because I wasn't looking at it properly. Anyway, so Sue Perkins was saying that when her double act partner Mel got married, it felt like it was frightening. She said that it's not I want what you have, it's not I'm jealous, it's the letting go and the profound love as you do it. And this sparked a few articles that I thought were quite interesting about female friendship and that sense of loss when your friend gets into a relationship. And speaking as someone who has been established in the first flush of a new thing, I just wondered if you've ever been on either side of that female friendship being torn by relationships thing.
I've been on the single side of things of that. But, I mean, most of the time it's fine. I've been put in some really uncomfortable situations, though, that actually lead to animosity, which, one of which, I am still friends with them. No. I have a very specific example. And it's basically, I went on a girly weekend away, and it was supposed to, every year it was just five girls. And over the years, two of them got in very serious relationships, which is fine. But one weekend went away with just those two couples and me, which was a last minute change of. It was supposed to be five girls. Last minute, they dropped out, so they brought their boyfriends. And this is right when I went part time in comedy, so I had no money at all, and I was giving up a Friday and a Saturday night to be there. And it was horrible. It was horrible. And it was that kind of animosity, because I don't think that they understood from the other side of things going, oh, well, I don't understand. And we're all just friends and we're all just hanging out. And I'm like, it's two couples in a cottage in the middle of nowhere and this girl. And I showed up absolutely tanked, like wasted. So I was like, the only way I'm going to get through this is with a bottle of vodka. And and they were like, oh, are you drunk? And I was like, how do you, what?
See, I think the onus there is on the person in the relationship not to be a dick about it.
Yes.
I mean, and I think, you know, like with Mel and Sue, they're both lovely, and I'm sure Sue wasn't, you know, Mel wasn't, rather. Because I suppose I do know of instances where I have temporarily lost my mind and could imagine myself doing that, of kind of going, oh, but it's nice if he comes along. Then, you know, I mean, he's practically a woman anyway. He's so understanding, he's so nurturing. Mm. And
it can be. I had a friend that, I still have this friend, but she was, her boyfriend went everywhere. So if I thought it was just us having a drink and he would rock up, you know, he would be with her, or it would just start off as, and then he'd call, oh, look, you know, oh, I need to set the name. Okay, yes. So-and-so's coming, and then they would appear, and I'd be, oh, how lovely, that'll be nice to me, won't it? Because then I get to sit with both of you all night, that'll be good, won't it? And then I can't talk to you about any of the things that I actually wanted to talk about, because...
Mm. And I don't think this is necessarily gender-related, because I have noticed the same thing with lesbian friends as well. Even if it's another woman, but it's a woman who is in a relationship with your friend, it's not the same dynamic, because you do often have to... You know, not moan about your relationship. Obviously, I'm in an incredibly happy marriage.
But you need
in which,
a break. Yes. And it's actually what you say, because that weekend, one of the girls was trying to say that they were going to try to start having a baby and then just couldn't tell us the whole weekend. Mm-hmm. And there was a matter of about 15 minutes where they, like, kicked the boys out and we finally got to have a talk, and then she mentioned it. But it was like, how are you supposed to do that? You can't do that in front of your boyfriend being like, psst, by the way.
I'm nauseous with that bit. They both said, we're trying for a baby.
Oh my God. Actually, if they both, all four of them sat down and were like, this is what's going to happen this weekend. I'm like, really? I'm going back to London. But no, yeah, I think, because it's not, I mean, I'm still good friends with them, but it is, I think people just get, because there are couples that you can hang out with and it's fine, and then there are couples that you can't hang out with and it is not fine. But
you know, it is hard when your friend starts a relationship, but I think the message we're sending out is don't be a dick. If you're the one in the relationship, don't be a dick.
Don't drop your friend.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, lovely Robin is going to have to go, so let's play a record to speed her on her pink bike all the way down. If anyone wants to go, Battersea Rise is the place to be. The Four Thieves.
Yes.
And Carl Donnelly will be there. Amazing comedians. It's going to be. And also, if you can't make it this week, it's a regular do, isn't it?
Yes, every Wednesday, 8:30 at the Four Thieves, called Laugh Train Home.
There may not necessarily always be free booze, but there is tonight. So
yes.
It's,
tonight is the only night of free booze.
Time to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, lovely Robin. Thank you very much for coming.
Cheers.
Another tune by Pink. Here we go.
Yeah.
in first place. I don't support the team. I can't take direction and my socks are never clean. Teachers dated me. My parents hated me. I was always in a fight because I can't do nothing right. Every day I fight a war against a mirror.
Let Me Get Me. It's a very good song, that, isn't it? About your self-destructive tendencies. Mm. I like Pink. Mm. Now, we've lost Robin to a gig.
Oh. But with free booze.
God knows we have absolutely got someone lovely to keep that seat warm. It's Abby Burdess.
Hi. And the seat is warm.
It is, I know. Yeah. It's nice to have that. We've got a memory foam mattress in our house. And my favourite thing is when my husband gets up, I shuggle over to his side of the mattress because he's bigger than me.
Yeah.
He generates more body heat. And memory foam mattress. I don't That's like great. To think what else is incubating.
You could probably bake home.
I have a memory foam bra.
Do you?
Yeah.
God, this is we're living in the future.
I know, I'm right. Truly, we live in a wonderful age.
Matching pants.
It's no matching pants, but it is actually like it's proper. I like to think that it's got the memory of my breasts when they were 17.
Memories.
Yeah. I posted it.
Memories of memories.
Exactly.
A
mammary foam bra.
God. Yeah. And is it like, I've got to go into, I've got to delve into your bra a bit further. Yeah. Is it like, so does it feel like a padded-y kind
of? Yeah, it's like a little, it's like a padded. And you look like Nigella when you wear it. You're like, whoa!
Zookers! That's amazing. Because I had a very rubbish memory. We were doing last week, actually. For some reason, memory foam. We should get sponsored by them. I had a really rubbish memory foam thing from Argos, which was... you know, it was memory foam in the memory of an elephant. It never forgot a
right.
shape.
Yeah.
Whereas I like the fact that this bra could see you through the rest of your life, changing.
Yeah, growing, exactly.
Or shrinking or whatever.
And just going, it's fine. That's gone now. Now you're in a new world.
I still love your breasts. I'm still here. I'm still holding on. God.
Yeah. No, I like them to hold that memory.
Yeah.
I'm clinging on.
What can they do with pants as well? Because your bottom would be.
That would be lovely.
Yeah.
That would, yeah. By a memory foam pant. Very good. I was in H&M today, and I've gone up to, like, now I think I'm about a size 40. Oh, I'm a 12 to 14, and it's just a constant voyage of discovery to me about how few clothes there are, even in what is, it's only the upper end of normal. But you still, like, I went into H&M and I was looking at the bras and it was hilarious.
That's a lower end of normal. The average size is 16, I think.
Oh, well, there you go.
There you go.
You see, I'm completely normal. And yeah, I was looking at the bras in H&M and I don't think it's age. I think at any age, none of those bras would have had a chance. And, you know, I mean,
what were they? What, they're massive.
Tiny little, like, you know, a little string with a couple of strands of lace. Like, you know, wispy, and you go, God, it would be amazing to have sort of, you know, gossamer lifting
boobs
things under. Yeah, but
you're saying they would lose a fight against your breasts. That's what you're
absolutely.
Saying.
Absolutely, they would be wrestled into submission within 20 seconds. I got stuck in a dress in there's a shop that's a little bit more expensive than I would normally go to. It's called And Other Stories. And it's like
I've heard of this shop, yeah.
And there was a dress in there that I quite liked, and I got it on, and I could not get it off. And it is such a... It's happened to me a few times in my life, but I really fully panicked today, because it was like... It was quite a sort of... It was a lot of material in it, and it just wasn't... It wasn't budging at all, and I thought, I'm going to have to get the person to come in.
Strip you naked. Mm. Did they?
No, I got out of it just. I think I might have ripped it, and I'm really sorry because it was really expensive.
So I just shredded it and left it on the floor.
I feel it was a design fault. It wasn't really my fault.
If you can put it on, but you can't take it off.
No,
that is one of the two things you're meant to be able to do with clothes: put them on and take them off.
It went on very easily. I mean, it really did. It sort of slid on, and then it was absolutely.
What immovable. Did it look like? Were you pleased when it was on?
No,
did you? Couldn't get it off quick enough.
It was really weird looking when it was on. It was quite a heavy sort of dense fabric, and it had zips up the sleeve, sort of like.
That's why they put the zips in the wrong place.
I thought, oh, this will help. I'll get some purchase with these zipped bits, but then that just created more flaps. Kind of fighting against it. Anyway, it was all great. And the other thing, I went into Topshop as well. I was in Oxford Circus, London's Oxford Circus, and then went into Topshop, and there was like a sort of tasselled skirt. And I said to the woman who was working, I said, oh, I remember these. I remember these from the first time around. And she just said, yeah, we get a lot of older women saying that.
What are you doing in here anyway? Get out.
Yeah. Size 14, nothing for you in here.
Good God.
Anyway, that was a... now, do you have any... We were talking about female friendships and the decimation... No, decimation is a word people always tell you off for using wrongly, don't they? The devastation
on
female friendships with relationships. And I just wondered if you had any views, Abby, if you've ever situation.
What, lost a friend because they've got
lost
together?
Or they've got together with someone, or you've got together with someone?
Well, it depends who they get together with, though, is the thing, isn't it, I think. If they've been Yoko Ono'd or not, you know, whatever. Going, oh no, they got Yoko Ono'd, now we can't be friends. I'm sure that's terribly disrespectful to Yoko Ono.
I love Yoko.
Who is, I'm sure, a lot of fun.
She's hilarious.
And now everyone's like, well, she seems like a fun friend. But, you know, in the old days it was like, oh, now we can't be friends.
She split up the band, didn't she?
Yeah.
Is there a male equivalent of the Yoko Ono? Did anyone split up? Like the Spice Girls, was that?
The Bangles.
The Bangles.
what went wrong?
See, that was good. We should have a male Yoko Ono.
Wasn't John Lennon capable of thinking for himself? Didn't he sort of make that decision ultimately himself
I think she made him very happy.
And he wanted artistically to fulfill his potential.
And he wrote Imagine after he got together with her, so it would kind of been all bad. But there have been, I think that things have happened over the, like, I've definitely lost friends. I fell out with my, I didn't see very much of my sister for a while after she got married. And then, and now we see each other all the time because, you know, after you've been together for a long time, you both hate your husbands. So,
you got that. It's fine.
We can get back. But there is, like, there's an arc, isn't there, with relationships where people get together with someone because then they're crazy in love with them and then they're like, oh, we never see them anymore. It feels like, oh, and then they're like, oh, I'm seeing a bit more of them.
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder why.
They're ringing me.
Like, yeah, they're ringing me all the time.
It's an awful sign.
Oh, okay.
In fact, both parties in the relationship are ringing me constantly.
But they want to meet up, but separately, always separately. Yeah, there is a bit of that, you know, like there's a natural arc with relationships.
Yeah.
But I mean, I do find that there is that thing that happens where you kind of have to like both of the people in the couple.
In order
to stay. And then that's sad, isn't it? When there are people who I see less of. No. Oh dear, I'm saying it out loud.
I know, no one's listening, it's fine.
Because I don't like their partners.
Or your partner doesn't like their partner, or there's some.
Or possibly they don't like me.
There's a lot of personalities involved, that is the problem, I know, see, I think that my husband has a friend who we don't see so much of because his partner doesn't like me.
Oh. Who is this?
And it's hard.
Idiot.
I know, I mean, I'm adorable.
You
I have
are
no
adorable,
idea.
Exactly.
I'm not to everyone's taste, it turns out. Which is fine, but
jealousy.
It's a great, it's a sort of difficult thing.
You're famously adorable.
Yeah, you. Getcha. It's difficult, though, also with working relationships. That's because the Mel and Sue thing. Because, you know, a working relationship can be like a relationship and you can be very, very close to someone. And then any sort of shift in that dynamic. I mean, in a way, it's easier, as with Mel and Sue, where, you know, she was talking about it was when Mel got married, there was a sort of a period of adjustment there. But it's harder if that person then starts working with someone else.
That's full on. That is my writing partner and I both met someone at roughly the same time, so it all worked out quite well. Mm-hmm. It was like about 6 months separate, so we were quite lucky in the whole sorry, what were you saying?
I mean, I think it is
but
timing.
If I found out even now she was writing with anyone else, I would knife that bitch. I would cut her. But yeah, it is like a it does feel like a very strong
Well,
she probably is now. I think she is, actually. She definitely is.
I've got through a couple of writing partners and seen them off, but
that must be more difficult in a way, because if somebody starts a relationship with somebody, they're not replacing you because you weren't having a relationship in that way with them, but if they're actually choosing to work with somebody else, that's actually...
My Dolak partner then did a show with a brilliant show which I really enjoyed with somebody who... Do you know Lisa Rhea?
Yes.
Who kind of is really similar to me. And I was just kind of going... It was quite weird watching the show because it was a great show and one I could never have written, but it was quite weird kind of watching it and going... So she's the me in this little dynamic. She's the me. She's like quite short with curly hair, and she's she's quite, you know, talky to the audience. And quite, and I was like, oh no, like she's the new me.
It's hard enough when that happens with boyfriends, where they get when you've split up with someone. Is it better if they go out with someone who is similar to you? Or
go
very
the opposite.
Dissimilar. You know, that's a difficult
or
one,
a
isn't
man.
It?
Yeah.
It's better
when
they sex go, altogether.
I don't think... I don't think anyone's ever gone out with a man after they've been out with me. But, I mean, I'm very different to... My husband's ex-girlfriends are all very different to me, which I don't know if that means that I'm what he was looking for the whole time.
That's a good interpretation. I'd stick with that.
Let's go with that. Let's think it was that. But then he's also very different to anyone I'd ever been out with as well. Same.
For example.
Sorry to any ex-boyfriends who are listening, but hey. Now let's move on. Blimey. Shall we have a record?
Yes, let's have Abby's record.
What have you brought in? And I don't know what this is, so I'm
I've got Get Your Freak On.
This is going to be some dancing is going to happen. Yeah. It's a shame we're not on webcam, really. I'll take pictures.
One day. Here we go.
Y'all can stop me now. Listen to me now. I'm lasting 20 rounds. And if you want me, then come on get me now. Is you with me now? Then biggie, biggie, bam. sing around. Now people gather round, now people jump around. Go, get your freak on, get your freak on.
Bitch, it's me. Again, for the podcast listeners, they are going to be absolutely clueless. But that was Get Your Freak On. In fact, now I'm going to, I don't want to embarrass you ladies, but I think we just started a fairly interesting conversation off the back of what we were talking about, trying things on in changing rooms. Because Abby was saying you just don't bother with trying things on anymore.
I don't try anything.
You'll never need to be cut out of a dress.
No, I'm pure catalogues now. I'm like an old lady. That's it. Do it on the internet.
Elasticated waist slacks from the back of the Sunday Express.
£5 a week for that leather jacket. It'll be yours in 3 years.
The last thing I tried on, I did actually. I did get stuck in.
Oh really?
Well. Yeah. But it was not. It was when I'd got home. I got stuck out of it. It was like it was a.
She's miming something
in
the chest.
I'm miming
somewhere
on
near
radio.
The memory foam bra. There was something going on.
It was a strapless jumpsuit.
Jesus,
I know. I don't know what I was thinking. And I shouldn't be wearing anything strapless.
That is
not appropriate for a lady of my proportions.
It just seems like an accident waiting to happen in every way for me. But you know.
And it was.
How did you use the toilet? Yeah. I mean, you know, it'd be.
It was so
nudity to go to the toilet.
Exactly. Yeah. And I hadn't thought it through, yeah. So I had to go full nude. And I was in Giles Brandreth's house.
As you do.
We've all been there, naked in Giles Brandreth.
And he has all of these pictures up on the walls in the loo. So there's like hundreds of pictures of celebs all over. You know, just his friends, but they're all famous.
Him with celebs.
Yeah, because he's like, you know, he's like he used to be a minister and stuff. Yeah. So there's all this stuff on the wall. And I'm completely naked in a jumpsuit around my ankles going,
Heseltine gazing down at you. Ted Heath disgusted at the sight of naked womanhood.
Exactly, you
couldn't get it, but you did manage to get back into it.
I couldn't get it back on, but it was fine.
And what happened in the end?
I got out. It was fine, and I waltzed out of there.
If anyone
would be unfazed and able to help a lady back into a jumpsuit, I think it's Giles Brandreth, isn't it? I think he would be perfectly.
I had a mishap with the jumpsuit as well. It's kind of a play suit. I think I told you about this, Lucy, actually, because I ended up, it was a play suit and it had a weird flap of material in the back, which I thought about cutting out, and I thought actually for some reason the construct of the outfit does need this weird flap of material.
Probably a double yoke, something like that.
I don't know, but it was annoying. It used to sort of, you know, people sort of tuck it back in for me, and I went to the
strangers would come up.
Yeah, just tuck it like, back just, in, there you just... go, love. And I was at a John Cooper Clarke gig, and I went to the lav, and I wanted a proper toilet, I wanted a poo, but yeah. But then this woman came in, and I thought, well, I can't go, because it's just me and her, it would just be awkward, so I'll just have to settle for a wee. And then when I was pulling it back up, I thought, well, somebody's just pissed all over the floor before I came in. And then when I hoiked it back up over my nakedness, it slapped me in the back of the neck. And the whole of the back bib area was absolutely drenched.
Oh,
and
dear.
So I wrang it out. And then obviously I had to put it I got some tissue, and I just sort of, you know, was scrunching it with the toilet. And I thought, do I put it under a hand dryer? And I thought, well, that's just going to soak in the smell of urine.
You're drying it in.
But now, you know, I was cursing that woman for being in there because I couldn't have a poo. And then I'm just so... she was like my guardian angel.
Yeah.
Because can you imagine?
A pooey back bib.
And then I thought, perhaps this is life's way of telling me that I'm actually too old for this
Or maybe not too old, just not physically coordinated enough with that particular
item. Yeah, that's not an age issue, is it?
Oh, dear.
Maybe not.
It wasn't that you were too arthritic to put the research back bib back on.
But it does say something about my bladder as well, because I think I'd only been to the toilet before the gig started.
Capacious bladder and very limited physical dexterity. That's what we're learning about. Amanda Redmond, ladies and gentlemen. That's Amanda Redmond, 69, on Twitter. If any listeners would like to write in with stories of toilet mishaps,
we'd love to.
Changing room experiences. I mean, I don't. But the problem is, if you buy something off the internet and then it doesn't fit, then you've got to actually send it back, haven't you? I see what I have done.
Can I tell you the post office?
Really bad thing that I did. I did buy a dress and wore it to a wedding and then decided it wasn't right and then just gave it back. No, we haven't all done that, Amanda.
Yes, we have.
I would never do that, and I judge anyone.
No, I did. I judged myself. It was an awful thing to do, but I knew I was never going to wear it again, and it was French Connection, and it was a bit pricey.
Pricey, yeah.
And it was just very uncomfortable. So I did sort of feel, well, maybe it's their fault, not mine.
You road-tested it. You didn't like it. If you know, it's like road-testing a car before you buy a car.
I know, but you don't take a car on a weekend and then, you know, leave the ashtrays full. And that was effectively what I felt I'd done. So apologies to French Connection UK. If they'd like to get in touch.
Stop sending you those parcels now.
Oh, exactly. All that free stuff that I get. Yeah. You're right. Can I raise something with you now, which was an article in The Guardian by Jennifer Weiner. Which I very much enjoyed, and I think enjoyed is the right word. It's, if you enjoyed a good book and you're a woman, the critics think you're wrong. It was so based on the reviews of a new book, which everyone's going crazy about, which was Hannah Yanagihara's A Little Life. It's 720 pages long. A book which many readers started off thinking they couldn't pick up and ended up being unable to put down. Released last March, the book began its life as one of the most praised and buzzy titles of the season, earning rapturous reviews in the New Yorker and the Atlantic. Everybody loved the book, it became very popular, and suddenly, of course, the backlash begins and the critics all start saying, actually, it's not that, it's not all that. And Jennifer feels that this is a... particularly happens to books written by women. Her other example, the main example, is The Goldfinch. Donna Tartt's Pulitzer Prize winning mega bestseller. And she said, you know, similarly, that came out, everybody loved it, and then critics said, oh yes, but it's a bit, and they use words that you feel they would only use to describe a book written by a woman. Oh, it's hysterical, over emotional, it's like a soap opera. They kind of basically try and denigrate anything that a woman writes is basically chick lit.
Seems a little bit as if someone smeared estrogen all over
exactly.
It just feels a bit funny. I don't know.
I feel the author might be growing something with her vaginal yeast. I feel that might be, you know. But I thought that was an interesting discussion point. Because I have kind of seen that in my own field of endeavour in the comedy world. You do sort of feel that your Kitsons, your Stuart Lees, do tend to be revered in a way that their work doesn't get criticised for being overly sentimental or mawkish. Well, I mean, I don't think Stuart Lee could ever be described as mawkish, but Kitson, I would say,
that guy loves kittens. He's mad for kittens.
Have you seen Stuart Lee's new Puppies and Kittens?
Puppies and Kittens.
Aren't they amazing? But Kitson's quite emotional. I thought I'll open that up to the group. What do you think? Is it oversensitivity on the part of Jennifer? I mean, it's done by female and male critics as well. It's not necessarily male critics slamming. But is it, you know, a sort of internalised mistrust of women's voices and women's ideas, do you think?
I don't know. I haven't read the article. But I know that I think it's fair enough to say that does happen to everybody, is that whole backlash phenomenon. Definitely happens to everybody. But if you're talking about using a particular way of criticising women writers, then clearly that is true.
Yes.
Then there are insults for a female writer which do not get, and I'm sure female comic,
yes,
which don't get levelled at men in the same way.
Yeah.
Just, there's a finer line to tread, isn't there? There's a tightrope, an evil wire, tie wire cutting into
cutting
your
straight
feet.
Straight into your vagina.
Straight into your vagina. Wherever you go. Oh, bit too far that way. Too far that way. Oh, God.
Oh, she's fallen. She's off. She's sliced.
She performed a clitoridectomy on herself. Just with that joke. Oh, no. Yeah, it's a difficult.
Again, though, hard to talk about ever if you are talking about your own field without sounding like it's sour
grapes. Whinging.
Yeah.
Not allowed to whinge.
You're not allowed
to whinge.
Are not allowed to whinge. Because also with publishing,
or
it is...
Or do anything else. Other female nagging.
Nagging.
Whinging.
Oh, yeah.
Whining. Any of those things are bad. They're all bad.
Or nagging.
Let's not do them.
But with publishing, because it often happens even before the book's been released as well, though, doesn't it? In terms of the cover is made to look a certain way if it's by a woman. And I think we've discussed before the David Nichols phenomenon of an amazing writer who really would be chick lit 100% if he was a woman, but because he's a man, gets, I think, a little bit more literary kudos than a similar woman might.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun, isn't he?
He's a lot of fun. I mean, you know.
As a writer, I mean, I don't know him, but
I mean, they're brilliant page turning and very emotional and very sensitive and all the things. Because, I mean, I love, you know, Alan Tyler, he's a BBC producer. Anne Tyler, his sister, Anne Tyler. I love the work of Anne Tyler, but I kind of suspect that she has a largely female readership because that's, you know, the way that it's marketed. And I don't think that she's necessarily any less relevant to men than, you know, sort of equivalent male writers. But I find sort of with books, you feel like you're constantly being steered sort of towards a woman as another woman, but men are being steered away from female writers.
Well, that's the big thing they say about kids' books, isn't it? That you can have people will buy books for a girl who have a male or female protagonist, and they won't buy books for a boy who have a female protagonist. Yeah, although they're now saying that that is now changing with Frozen and all of that because of the massive success of that film. They're saying, oh well, maybe the boys won't mind.
But the Hunger Games, isn't that largely?
That's a kids' thing, isn't it?
That's young adult.
There have been some massive successes recently, so maybe things are changing.
Yeah.
But I mean, I know those are films. That's a bad example. But Hunger Games was a book first.
It's a series of books, yeah.
And you would hope that the films will drive people to the books. When I read, I've been reading Harry Potter to my daughter, and she insists that it's actually Harriet Potter. And the whole thing is actually written about a girl.
That's nice. Yeah,
my daughter, she is. But I think, you know, that's the thing about writing, is that I've always been able to project myself into the mind of a male character. I think I'm not, I find that a very easy leap, and I wonder if men find it a little bit harder because they're not encouraged to do it so much to sort of identify with female characters.
Maybe.
Or
maybe
like a Holden Caulfield, for example.
They'd be absolutely fine with it if everyone expected them.
Yeah. I'm sure they would. I mean, those sort of big angsty, you know, I am thinking of things like The Catcher in the Rye, where you go, oh, you know, when you're a teenager, it's about a teenager rather than about a teenage boy necessarily. And then you read it as a grown up and go, oh, he's a dick. But, you know, it's
Holden Caulfield is a dick? But I love that boy.
But I wonder what kind of man he grew up to be as well. Because in the book, you know, he stays, you know, he's just
a mad one in a hospital.
Case closed.
Or whether he's just a dick because he's a teenager is what I mean. Or whether it's because he was going to grow up to be a grown-up dick.
Yeah, I mean, I was a dick when I was a teenager.
I was a complete prick when I was a teenager. Still waiting to shake that one off.
And I'm doing a whole thing in my show about, my new stand-up show about what a dick I was as a teenager, and I've found writings to support it.
Oh.
And it's very depressing.
Well, you found some old diary entries?
No, I found old pieces of journalism that I did.
Oh, amazing.
Oh wow! That's gonna. Oh
God! It really.
Are you gonna read them out?
I'm gonna read them out. But it's a fine line, isn't it, between sort of navel gazing? But I think I am enough of a dick in them that I think it will be
funny,
compelling. Yes.
Yeah. So are you saying that when you were younger, you found it easy to identify with the male protagonist?
No, I think I've always found it easy to identify with male protagonists. And
me too. I've definitely always got. But though I don't know if maybe that. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Because I'm seeing my 6-year-old reading stuff now, and she's very interested in the female character. Like, she's a geek, so she likes Star Wars and Harry Potter. She's like, okay, who's cooler, Hermione Granger or Princess Leia?
That's her sort of thing.
And
in the new Star Wars, looks like there's actually going to be some women in it.
Yes. Yeah, it does look like it's actually genuinely quite evenly balanced.
Yeah.
So, but it's weird that she latches onto those, whereas I think when I was young, I would go, I'm Luke.
Yeah.
Whereas she's like, no, I'm Leia, and that's who I'm going to be, and she's the actual leader. What you don't know is that she's the leader.
And so
that's the way she works that through.
Imbuing those women with power that they don't necessarily have in the narrative.
But she's got a... Yeah, have I told you about the thing my kids about... They call the patriarchy. I don't know. I must have ranted. I must have done a rant at some point.
Abby's daughters are quite young.
They're 4 and 6, and they now refer to. And it was because I thought I mustn't start talking about politics too. I mustn't start talking about politics. And my husband was like, "Don't give them the bad news too soon. Come on, let's just. They're innocent." And I'm like, well, I don't know. It's difficult because they're getting a whole load of. Gender stereotypes already thrust at them. What do I give them the tools to fight them? Anyway, and I must have ranted at some point. So they now call the patriarchy the trick.
Ooh.
They refer to it as the trick. So I think they misheard it. So they're like, is this part of the trick, Mommy?
That's brilliant, though, isn't it?
Good? Yeah. Insightful.
Isn't it good? So they're like, you know, if they had an argument about, I've got a box in my house that's got sugar and spice and all things nice on it. And they read it and they were like, is this part of the trick? Little girls made of sugar and spice and all things nice.
It is part of the trick.
What are the boys made of? Yeah. And I was like, it's quite interesting when you kind of start looking. And I was like, it is. Yeah, it is part of the trick.
I'm going to start calling it the trick now.
It's a useful thing. And they're like, you know, the trick. They have little arguments about it, little political arguments about it. And that's not part of the trick.
That's great.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a, But they sort of, it's about defining that they that the trick is that boys should be one way and girls should be another. So it's all like, boys don't have to like only like superheroes, yeah, and girls don't have to, and all of that stuff. So they and but they sort of, they've started describing people. Like she, as said the other day, my eldest said, "Oh, she's a. I think she's a lady who believes in the trick, mummy."
Oh, and I was like,
"I know just who you mean." Oh dear.
We all know some of those. The lady who believes in the trick. Oh, now speaking of, there's no segue into this.
There is. Well, I was thinking because Laura obviously was close to being a teenager than
voice of
any
abuse.
Of us.
So Laura, our lovely producer outside, she's going to come in.
Her outdoors.
Lovely Laura, and you come. Look at the youth wafting into the room. Now, do you know, a couple of things. First of all, that the discussion we've just had, I thought what we could do is put an appeal out to the listeners as well. Mm. Our gentlemen listeners, if there are female characters with whom you have strongly identified in books, films, whatever culture you choose to enjoy, why not let us know? About in the same way that I've said Holden Caulfield was someone that I felt I could relate to, I could list off thousands. But were there female characters in your youth or even now that you feel that you could relate to and that you could, be?
What you mean they are you?
Yeah.
They're a little you avatar.
Yeah.
In fiction.
Because I would like to know that. I will go home and ask my husband and any other men that I encounter. But listeners, you're much more intelligent than him. Please do contribute. And the other thing I was going to say is that the tattoo competition prize remains unclaimed. And I am going to keep banging on about this until someone takes
me. We've even had a rollover with this prize. It's quite a large.
£50 it's been on the table. I cannot believe that.
What
nobody.
It,
so right. Ah. We love Laura's tattoos. We love them. And I have been offering £50 in tattoo money to any listener who wants to have a tattoo, maybe doesn't have the cash or just needs a bit of an incentive to do it. I will pay £50 to any listener who would like to have a tattoo. It does not need to be my face. I mean, it could be. It'd be nice. It could be. I was thinking the FUBAR, you know, the FUBAR
logo.
Kind of little, it's like a graphic equaliser that looks like a middle finger.
Yeah.
That's quite a, you know, blocky tattoos were in a few years ago. I remember a lot of my friends had, you know, the Blue Note Records logo that's kind of quite blocky.
Yeah, that's the problem with tattoos when they were in, and then what does one do when they're not in?
They'll come back. They'll come back. Blocky tattoos will come back. So you could have that, or I tell you this, today I was on the tube and a woman got on, probably about your age, Laura, young, and she had on her legs, she had about four women, and they were all very voluptuous women, and one of them was a mermaid, and it was like a fat mermaid, and it was beautiful. It was really, really nice, to the point that I did almost go up to her and say, "Where did you get your tattoo done?" But I didn't because I thought it looks a bit creepy. Looks a bit creepy when you're 42.
I don't know. Like, I've had when I on the tube, some woman asked me like, "Oh, I like your tattoos," and I just didn't know what to say. I was like, "Oh, thanks." Like,
was it creepy or was it okay?
I don't know. I didn't really know what to say. I felt like I had to keep talking to her, so we just talked like the whole way.
Right. Okay. It's all right if it happens at the end of the journey when you know you're getting off.
I know, but then if I was asking, if I was like, "Where did you get your tattoos?" I've got to give a bit of lead up time. So that she can actually answer.
You were scared that she was going to ask you to show her your tattoos. Have you got tattoos?
No, I just stare at them.
Yeah. No new tattoos this week, Laura? Nothing?
No. I can't get any more because my mum will cry.
Oh. Well, I'd say if the £50 goes unclaimed, we'll get your mum tattooed.
She did say mum. We were going to get matching ones once, but then she never did it.
Okay. Well, she did. She's offered.
Yep, she's up for it. Right, here we go. Right, well, listeners, you've got to get it in quickly if you want.
That's it. That's the whole thing is just to say you want it. Just to go. Yeah. I want £50, and this
you've
is what I'm
getting.
You've got
to provide us with photographical evidence
that you've actually done it.
Yeah,
and I might do it.
Ah, here we go.
There's £50 going.
£50 on the tab. I mean, I haven't got it on me. We'd have to go to a cash point. we could do that later. That'd be absolutely fine. I was thinking, basically, it's £50 of free money.
Yeah.
Why is no one claiming it?
What about a tattoo of your ass on my face rather than
or the other way around.
The other way around.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you what I might do is I might get a memory foam. No, I can't think of any. Some way of incorporating the memory foam bra. Lovely, Laura. You've probably got some desperately trendy music that you want to play, haven't
obviously,
you?
Obviously, yeah.
Achingly trendy.
They're called Black Honey and it's called Madonna.
Ooh. Mm.
Here we go.
And Madonna. I'd quite liked it. We were sort of talking, weren't we?
Yeah, I liked it, though.
I liked it, yeah. But we'll listen to it again at the end. Mm. Time for opening a drink live on air. We've gone
time would
much
come.
Longer. 25 past seven, that is. It's probably
that
the latest.
That is good. That's about the time I usually open.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, exactly. That's very respectable timing, isn't it?
Children in bed at seven, downstairs.
Do you want that one?
I really don't mind. I really don't mind.
There you go. We'll open those live on air. Amanda needs to go for a wee.
I do. I'm just going to do that before I have
You're not wearing a back bib, are you? There's no back bib. It's not a play suit. You'll be absolutely fine. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, listeners. We're going to do now, Abby, the bit where we trawl through Mumsnet.
Okay.
This is the bit, is it?
I bloody love Mumsnet. Well, we've been having people from Mumsnet on, and this week we're flying solo. So there's no one from Mumsnet in the studio. It's just us.
Just allowed to say whatever we want.
Well, I love it because there's always something that comes up. So the hot topics this week in the Am I Being Unreasonable board.
Okay.
This, which is my favourite bit. So is this woman being unreasonable? About emojis. So basically, in short, what happened to this poor woman was that her dog ran off while her husband was walking it, and they were looking for it for ages. They found the poor dog in the end, but he's got a broken leg, and they're waiting for a call to get the dog back home from the vet, and so she's all upset. And she got a sad face emoji from her best friend. And I'd never say it to her, but I think it's a lazy response. If you don't have time for a proper message, wait, but don't send me a single pathetic face. What do others think? It got me thinking of science fiction. Will we all be communicating by emojis and language will disappear? Brackets ironic. And then she's done an emoji. Bless her.
Oh, she's undermined her own argument there.
She's got a healthy sense of the sort of nature of the question. But yeah, I think she's right. I do feel awful for her. And it is a bit... But is it a generational thing?
I'm properly old-fashioned about this. I hate emojis.
Yeah.
I hate them.
Mm.
And I have friends who use them, young friends.
Yeah.
And I did once get sent one about... It was about the 7/7. And someone sent a sad face.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, don't... I think it was 7/7. It was a terrorist atrocity.
Yeah,
and I was like, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't.
Not adequate. That is not an adequate response to this
situation.
Don't
do that. So for a broken leg dog, that seems fine.
Well, you're harsh. Well, I mean, I suppose it's better, but it still to me isn't. Yeah, no, I don't think it is quite good
enough. I think it's probably just because I can't use them properly. And I always feel a bit as if emoji are kind of telling you how to feel rather than telling you how the person sending it feels.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
Okay.
Because, I now have friends who do use them. And if they use them, I will occasionally use them back.
Oh, dear.
And because it is difficult with text messages and emails to always get
say
across
precisely
exactly
what you mean. Yeah.
And, you know, tone can be misinterpreted. And I think actually with people you don't know very well, there is a case for... Actually, I'll put a little smiley face emoji just so there's absolutely no doubt that what I'm saying is lighthearted.
But people abuse it. They abuse that privilege. It's like on Facebook where they do that. I do this in stand-up, so I'm going to not do it like I do it in stand-up because then I'll feel weird. But where they put a winking face off, and it's like a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Where you could
just say anything. You can say anything offensive, rude, disgusting things, and then go winking face, and then that's all right. That's not all right. It's not all right to.
Is it the equivalent of banter? Is this what it's?
Yeah, maybe it's like, hey, don't worry, it's banter.
Banter,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, it is. It's risen at the time of banter, hasn't it? It is, you know, it's part of the whole disease of banter, which is. But generally, I think actually all the other posters on Mumsnet kind of said yes. It was wrong.
Unacceptable.
So this woman was not being unreasonable, and I hope her dog is much better now. Hope the broken leg is mending fast. Cartoons. This was from Feminism Chat. Cartoons, kids programs, movies to watch that aren't blatantly or subliminally sexist. Mm-hmm. So the original post on this was, I mean, do any even exist? I'm sick of Daddy Pig being lazy, of princesses waiting for the one. I even realised today that girls' eyes in cartoons are typically bigger than boys. I read that widening eyes is a way to look like you need protecting. So tell me, is it no TV, or is there anything decent to sit my son in front of when I need to get the dinner on? A few people saying I watch virtually nothing. Very helpful. I always like it when people are helpful like that.
I did watch television.
Do you know what? But someone does mention Masha and the Bear.
So you set your children off on a science experiment.
Yes. Why not give them a cup and ball to play with, or a matchstick model of some balls? Those are the kind of things the children should be doing. It is a difficult one. We've sort of touched on this before, so I won't spend too long on it, because people who don't have children probably have got sick of us talking about how sexist the world of kids entertainment is. But there is a plug in there for Masha and the Bear, which is a lovely, it's a Russian cartoon. It's just kind of nice. It's a bear and a girl, and she's quite naughty, and she does have very big eyes, but she's in no way helpless. I think she sort of is subverting that wide-eyed innocent.
She's not using them to appeal to a strong male protector. That's
she
what
is
you're
not.
Saying.
She's
okay,
using
great.
Them to disguise the fact that she's a bit of a little cow. CBeebies. Then everyone piles on and says, "Yeah, CBeebies." And it's true. We watch a lot of television in our house because I'm very lazy. And CBeebies it sets the standard. It's not they try very hard, I think, to make it not sexist or difficult for a parent to explain in any way.
What, Generally,
yeah,
I think
yeah,
they
generally
do.
They're pretty
I think
good.
They do. I think it's pretty good. Sarah Ben and Holly's Duck. Little Kingdom annoys me.
Yeah.
Sarah and Duck.
Oh, it's
yes.
lovely.
It's
if you don't know it, just get the same tune to Sarah and Duck. It's beautiful.
That's all you have to do. There are loads of beautiful, beautiful things on there. Apart from Ben and Holly's Little Kingdom.
Which is on Channel 5. That's Milkshake.
Oh, is that Milkshake?
I love Milkshake, though. Yeah. Milkshake's my guilty pleasure. I was talking to, I can't remember who it was, but a comedy dad. And he was saying because the presenters on CBeebies are all very nice, lovely young people who you could take home to your parents. And the Milkshake Gang on Channel 5 are filthy. They are silly. I love them. They're basically holiday reps, Monkey. They are like, you know, Club 1830. You go then straight on.
You can see they've been out the night before.
Yeah, they are absolutely wrecked. They are brilliant. But they're so good. And they do a thing called Bot Box. Which is a dancing program.
That is the best bit, where you have to dance in front of the TV.
It's so good. Boppity bop bop, bop box, it's brilliant. But yeah, it's and it is that classic one for the dads, because all the women are quite comely,
aren't they? Yes.
And it's a bit, anyway. But yeah, Ben and Holly, I do.
They're the ones who are aging really rapidly. The ones who they're like really beautiful, and then 3 years later they're like fired because they're obviously partying so hard.
The pace of life on children's telly is very
too much.
Very hard. Well, I never realised as well that because like you get to know the presenters on children's television, as you know, when you're a kid, you know the ones who were on it during your bit. So when you have kids, you know the ones who are doing it in your children's window, but I didn't realise they all get retired off to their own show. So Chris and Poi, who do Show Me, they used to be the big deal on CBeebies, and now then you get replaced by newbies, and so you know it's like this horrible inevitability,
like a Logan's Run.
That's it.
How long does their lifespan last? Because Brian Cant was on throughout my childhood.
No, not anymore. Brian Cant, well, A, he would never have made it
no,
on
Johnny Morris
started.
Yeah, right,
yeah, I mean it's all you've got, you know, basically you're about 20 to 25, so you've got
so it's like it's a big brother relationship you have, or big sister relationship with the children rather than a parental one. That's what they're going for, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I do think it is largely to attract the mums and dads market, but give you some eye candy.
Lovely Mr. Bloom.
Well, I see.
A lot of people like him.
Leaves me cold. Pingu, I love the fact somebody suggests Pingu, and that is absolutely, there's absolutely nothing wrong with Pingu at all. Just Pingu is the timeless classic. Let's move on from the lovely world of kids television. Let's move on to He Spat in My Face.
Yep.
This is the darker side of life. It's in the sex topics. Is this a thing? Do people get turned on by that?
Oh, he did it on purpose.
It's in a new relationship.
It wasn't just an awkward moment.
No, I mean, it's a bagel. Oh, God.
We've all done that. My God.
Yeah. All right, okay.
The unfortunate, ordering something a little bit too ambitious when you're on a date.
Exactly,
this was, they're having sex, and then he says, "Will you spit on me?" And she goes, "All right, if you want." I mean, and spits on him gently, and then he spits in her face, which I don't like at all. And
I think on the tits, fair enough.
anything's fine in that area.
That's fine, I think. But
that's like the body's playground, and the. The face does seem. Someone said, I think it's from porn.
I think it's from porn. That's from porn, isn't it? That's the sort of.
Isn't it odd though that
dirty
people,
boy,
people? Oh. I had a fling with a professional Western Samoan sportsman who spat water at me and then spanked me. I weighed 8 stone and he was about 16 stone of pure muscle and about 6'4" tall. I shot across the room like a human cannonball. Oh my goodness me! Oh, it's all happening. That was I mean, whatever people want to do in their own bedrooms is up to them, but I wouldn't. It just seems sort of unhygienic as much as anything, doesn't it?
On the face, I think on the face.
Yeah.
On the knee?
I don't even like spitting in the street.
I don't either.
Person,
you're not spitting in the street. That's worse. Spitting in the street is worse than spitting.
That's worse.
Yes, I think so. You know, spit in the street in the privacy of your own home. If someone goes, "Would you mind if I?" He asked, didn't he? He said, "Would you mind if I?"
Well, no, he said, would you spit on me?
Yeah.
But then she necessarily thought he was going to reciprocate and maybe not in such a violent way. I mean, you know, that is...
He was like, great, yeah!
But then it does, it's a warning, isn't it? It's a warning that if, you know, like if a man says, will you wee on me? If you dish it out, you've got to be able to take it, basically.
That would be bang, ding, 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 ding. Yeah. Alarm bell.
I know. Yeah. Well, as someone says, you know, it's, this isn't a kind of, let's have a calm conversation about it later. It's a, you know, immediate, what the fuck was that? Get the fuck off me and do one conversation.
Does it say if this is the first time that they'd had relations?
It's a new relationship. So, but I mean, in a way, better he does it now than 6 months down the line when you're really into him. And like, by the way, the thing I didn't mention is, I mean, it's not the most disgusting thing I've ever heard, but there's something quite, it does feel like power play.
It feels a bit disgusting.
Yeah, it's not kind.
A little bit.
Here's another. Let's go for a lighter saucy one. This is.
I'm
am I being
your
unreasonable?
Face any minute now. You know that's going to happen.
I know, but what if it happens by accident now and then we think?
Yeah, like, I think Lucy was coming on to me.
she did just do that.
I don't know. Should I spit back?
Now I'm feeling all self-conscious. I'm going to have to. Just going to lubricate my mouth. There we go. So I've got something to spit. So am I being unreasonable to be bemused by my colleague's saucy Secret Santa wish list? So at work, we're using an online Secret Santa thingy on which you can add a wish list from Amazon. God, I thought only porn stars did that. So anyway, the person I've drawn has sexy pinup girls act erotic calendar on his list.
What a dude.
Yeah, so basically the dilemma is...
Should I get it for him?
What should I do? So
get him some soap. Then I'll wash
some soap and a rope, yeah. Wash your brain out with this. She wants to call his bluff and buy it, but then I may get in trouble with the ethics police. Her husband thinks I should buy him a male nudie calendar instead, but same problem as above. Is there a way... There is a way I can send him an anonymous message on the Secret Santa thing. Maybe I could pretend he's been reported for an offensive item. What should I do?
Buy him a Cliff Richard calendar.
Do you know, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah. Great
that's exactly what I was going to suggest.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. He has his shirt unbuttoned in some of them.
He has his shirt unbuttoned.
He does.
He has his boots out.
He does. So there's, you know, something for everybody.
What I like most about this is that... Oh, look! There you go. Masterpiece 1. Has also suggested Cliff Richard's calendar.
That's a vote of three people.
There you go. Yes. Well,
problem solved.
Definitive. There you go. That's what you need to do. The thing I quite like is the outrage on Mumsnet is not so much about him wanting the calendar. It's more about the idea of having a list for Secret Santa.
Yeah, because that's so not the game, guys.
That kind of does defeat the object, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah, I completely agree. Secret Santa is about knowing what other people in your company think of you by what they get you.
Mm.
Oh, is that what it is? So you what do? Yeah. You get somebody else. You get nominated.
Yeah, so you get
somebody.
Given someone's name, and then you all spend £5 or £10 or whatever. And so you have I've done it in the past. Me and my friend got each other in my last office job, and we just got each other's names, and we went, we'll just give each other the cash because, you know, that's clearly the best option. So that was quite a lucky one.
Go and get a drink together.
I had a friend who got given deodorant.
No.
Oh, no. Ouch.
Was it, like, fancy? Could it have been...
No, that's awful.
That's really horrible.
But he is really stinky.
Oh.
And so, in a way, you're like, well, this allows me to bring this up.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's really helpful.
But not at Christmas.
No, it's not that Christmassy,
although
it?
You don't really give presents any other time of year, do you? I suppose that would be your one opportunity.
Well, it would just be, like, maybe leave it on the... I don't know. There's
leave it on there. I don't know.
A friend of mine had the same. He had it levelled at him that he was a bit whiffy, and he got really upset because he was told at work that people didn't want to sit next to him, and then the boss decided to be really patronising and say, you know, you could just go over to Boots in your break and buy deodorant. They're about £2 to £3. He's like, I do wear deodorant.
Oh, no.
But there's a particular reason why, which I won't go into now because it would reveal the, you know, who the person is that they're listening, but of why they have sometimes a bit of an odour.
Aww.
And it was just, you know, and he came back and he was very upset.
Oh, it's awful, isn't
it's
it?
It's awful.
Poor love.
I had an auntie who used to be very sort of personal. And when I was going through puberty, she kept sort of saying, "Oh, you should go to the chemist and get something for your spots. You should, you know." And it's not. I think most of the time you do know. I mean, do you think your friend knew that you were stinky before the deodorant?
I think it might have been one of the only times that that's ever happened, where it was probably okay. Because I think it was probably useful information for him.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was quite robust as a human.
I know. See, the thing
is... right. He was like, all right.
Good. Well, good. I'm glad.
Oh, that's good. At least he wasn't
That story's
upset.
Got a happy ending. I'm delighted that story's got a happy ending.
But I was like, oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm slightly worried because I'm reeking today.
I so am I.
I stink.
Oh, we're having this discussion, weren't we? We're sitting in a cesspit.
Thank God for the air conditioning, otherwise the reek would be absolutely horrific. Should we take a record at this
let's
point?
Let's do that. Let's do that. Go and freshen
get
up.
Get out of this conversation.
We're going to have my choice now, which is a band called Desire and a song called Under Your Spell, which, have you seen the film Drive?
No,
brilliant film, Ryan Gosling.
Oh,
fantastic soundtrack.
Meant to see
that. And this is on it, and it's really good. Here we go.
I don't need
Show on FUBAR Radio.
Lovely. Nice choice, Amanda.
Thank you.
Slightly gloomy.
Mm. Oh, I don't know. I think it's whimsical, and it makes you kind of stare out window at the rain. And
I've been doing that though. We were just saying actually
that was quite rude. Actually, you could have been talking to us through that track, but no.
No, just stare out the window, see if anything interesting happens. No, I am trying to jolly myself along because it's been an awful last couple of weeks. Oh. Mm.
The cold,
the war, the awfulness. It's been. Yeah. I did my mother and baby gig today that I often talk about on here because it's. I do it on a Wednesday, and so it's for mums with babies under one, and it was really nice because they're all in the baby bubble of they've just got new babies and that's all they can think about, obviously. Yeah, yeah. And I did feel like awful because I started sort of talking about what was going on in the world, and you could just see all their little faces going, "Don't tell us about
crumpling."
Mm. Yeah, World War III. What? Hey, what? Mm. And I was like, "No, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Just enjoy your babies. It's all fine. Right.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Everything's great out there. Don't worry, Mum."
No. Now I was going to, because we're racing towards the end of the show. I'm going to talk about what you've got coming up to close the show. But before we do that, Abby, I need to talk about what I've got coming up.
Okay.
Because Saturday is a big day for me. People say to me often, Lucy, being a stand-up comedian, isn't that scary? And I'm like, no, it's not really. What is scary is agreeing to go on University Challenge, which I've done on Saturday.
Foolish.
I know, it's one of those things where they email you and you're so flattered to be asked that you then say yes and then have leisure to think about it and realise why in the name of God am I doing this. But so what I thought we could do, if you don't mind indulging me, is I can cram for my University Challenge,
because
they've sent me the University Challenge quiz book. So we're going to do a live on-air quiz. Now, Abby, remind us which university you will be representing.
I shall be representing University College London.
UCL.
Nice. Lovely. Okay, I'm going to
I shall be representing Manchester University.
Okay.
I
said, like, the University of Life.
Yeah, University of School of Hard Knocks. That's Yeah,
that's okay. Where I went to school. I went to university, and I did my postgraduate degree at the Sorbonne. Sorry. Carry on.
So instead of doing the actual mastermind, when they, I'm going to make you buzz in, obviously, because I think that's always amusing.
Well, we'll just see if either of us can.
But, so I'm just going to ask you. You're going to do best of five. Okay,
best
so
five.
Here
right.
we go.
Here we go. Thanks, Amanda. You're very fair. You're no Paxman, but you're very fair.
No. I am going to enjoy saying you'll start for 10.
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Okay. What term describes either of the ridges in the floors of the lateral ventricles of the brain that have an important role in memory process? It is derived from the Greek for horse and sea monster.
Oh, hippocampus.
Oh, of course it is.
Answer's at the back of the...
What Jeremy Paxman doesn't have to do is scramble for the answers.
Oh, I know that now. That's there. Is it the hippocampus? And I got it right.
Hey. I should have... I tell you
we
what.
Both got that one, if it is right. But it might not be right, but I just thought, there is
hang
horse.
Hang on. I've just got it through the back of the...
Dear listeners, Amanda is trying to...
It'd probably be easier if somebody would just Google it out there.
You can't do that.
Can you Google it for me, because I did warn you. Oh no, you're right. Yeah. Well done, Lucy.
It's very nice. Abby,
and
I found allowing me to get that right.
She's definitely. I didn't even have it in my brain.
Okay. Here we go. Are we ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
How is the number of four expressed? How is the number four expressed in Roman numerals on many clock faces? The clock face of Westminster Tower housing Big Ben are exceptions, having four expressed as IV.
Oh,
well, you wanted, four.
Get a buzz?
Four eyes.
Okay.
Four eyes. It's good job. Right. None of us are wearing glasses, otherwise.
I'm guessing.
That would be a funny joke I could do. If that one comes up in the show.
Do four eyes.
I could go, hey, four eyes. Yeah, nice.
Very nice. Yes, absolutely.
Lovely.
I want to
see, I was going
to
buzz in there. I was going to buzz in with No. I was going to buzz in with IV at the beginning, you see. That's what it's good because tactically, this is very useful. This is very useful. Don't buzz in too early on the challenge.
Oh, I've just lost the page where the answers were. Hang on.
If it seems like an amazingly easy question.
Yeah, probably isn't. But then, the problem is, when they do these ones which are for not proper teams, for so-called celebrities, they do dumb them down.
They dumb them right
down.
Just go, what's your name?
Yeah, that would be awful.
I can't remember.
Can you guys take a long time to answer the question? I can go, come on.
No, Paxo.
Okay.
I love him.
Ah, right, okay. Yeah. Awarded for the first time in 2003, which prize, named after the Norwegian mathematician Niels Henrik, recognises a lifetime's achievement in mathematics? It was introduced to complement the Nobel Prize, which does not have an award for mathematics.
Well, I'm going for either the Niels Prize or the Henrik Prize, but yeah. I suspect it may be a trick question. Yeah. Named after...
Is somebody buzzing in?
The Bohr Prize, B-O-H-R, guess... No.
There is a Niels Bohr, that is true.
No, I'm going to pass it over to Manchester.
Manchester Porter. Oh, I don't know. I don't know, Amanda.
It's the Abel Prize, obviously. Oh, so nobody got...
Who's Niels Bohr? Is he a physicist?
He was a physicist, yes. I know nothing other than that.
That's it.
I love the fact there should be some supplementary information there's not. There's nothing. Got nothing else on that.
Oh, I don't want to read that question. It's really difficult to read.
Okay, yeah. Okay. To be honest, it will never come
too
up if it's too hard to read. It won't be on.
I'm sure Paxo gets a veto question. They're just...
I'll read it out.
He says, oh, it's too easy. No, they can't do that.
No, I haven't.
Okay, I am going to read the question then. It's just that I couldn't be bothered to read this bit that's coming up. You'll understand why. Designed by R.J. Mitchell, the Supermarine S.6B, which won the Schneider Trophy in 1931, was a forerunner of which fighter aircraft?
Harrier jumped
out. Was that a buzz?
No, it wasn't.
Okay, UCL.
Go on, UCL.
But Harrier jumped out, I'm saying it, because that's my favourite aircraft.
Ooh. I'm going to have to pass it over to Manchester.
If it's not the Harrier, it's the... What year was it? Oh, no, you don't get to ask again, do you? No, you don't get anything.
No, you haven't got to
think of another aircraft, the stealth bomber.
Oh, it was the Spitfire.
Of course it was. God, that's embarrassing.
That's like 40 years out of date I was.
I mean, like a stealth bomber, it's not even... I mean, it's not anywhere near... Paxman would be spitting. He was spitting in my face.
What did you just say?
If Paxo spat in your face, would you assume that you were supposed to spit back?
Yeah. I would totally spit back.
Paxo just says that as a matter of course, though. On a date.
He's quite a long way away. I mean, it's going to be quite...
So I think, because we've only got a couple of minutes left, I think that basically this needs to be a tiebreaker question.
The tensions.
Okay.
Palpable.
An agency founded in 1951 and based in Geneva for what do the...
Red Cross.
Is that...
Beep. That's not there, is it? Because what do the letters something stand for?
Yeah, well,
it's not going to be. It was
United Nations High Commission for Refugees.
UNHCR.
Yeah, she would have got that. Let's finish
the question, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I think what we've learned is I should pull out of university challenge.
Are we leaving it as a... Should we do one more question? And we'll see. Okay. So this
you want a winner. You got to have someone to win. Yeah, the winning.
Derived from the Hebrew for fitness or legitimacy, the term... Kashrut describes the religious restrictions governing which aspect of Jewish life?
Eating.
Beep.
I'm going to give you that. It's diet.
No, so it is. I was going to say
UCL.
Clothing anyway.
Yeah. UCL. Yay. But don't lose heart, Lucy.
Do you know what?
Don't lose heart.
What I need to do now is I need to do an intensive training course, don't I? I need to do a sort of rocky start. There'll be a montage of me just sitting in a library just reading loads of books.
Turning over the page, sleeping a little bit.
Waking up
in a pile of drool. Getting out your pencil.
One of you could come and just slap me around the face, wake me up. It'd be fine.
Putting away some more big leather bound books. Oh.
This is the movie. When they make the movie of my life. Well, they see bloody David Nichols has already done a thing about university.
Yeah, he's done it.
He started for 10.
Of course, started for 10, yes.
Bastard. we only have a couple of minutes left. So, Abby, tell me some things about you and your life. Let's just wrap it up.
I've got nothing to plug.
It's nice, isn't it?
It is nice. It's quite nice just to have a chat.
It is.
I was meant to be seeing Lucy on Saturday. She can't come, so that's why I'm here.
We've just moved that date to the radio studio. Nothing wrong with that at all.
What am I doing? I've got a Christmas show coming up with these funny people that I do called Tall Tales.
Oh, lovely. That's in Kilburn, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But we're doing... The Christmas show is going to be at the Network Theatre in Waterloo.
Ooh.
Yes.
I've never heard of it.
No, I have not. Apparently some new place.
What date? Do you know what date
cool
that is?
I don't know. It is the 17th to the 19th of December.
Oh, good. More than one opportunity to see it.
Yeah, so it's like a three show. It's like all of the, you know, the Mighty Finn, John Finnemore does it, and it's like, it's a sort of, it's very Radio 4-ish fun.
Fun in a Radio 4.
So fun in a Radio 4 kind of way.
A gentle amount of fun in tweed.
Exactly the right amount. Yeah.
Not to make you in any way threaten your bladder. Yeah. Oh, what about you? What are you doing?
Pretty much University Challenge. That's all we need to know, really. Yeah, I've got some other gigs. I'm all corporate events at the moment. I'm absolutely... just sucking on the corporate dick and loving it. So I'm hosting the General Practice Awards in London tomorrow.
Oh, that's fun.
Well, that is actually nice. That's more of a NHS thing, and I've got various. I quite like it. It's quite a nice, when you get to a certain age, entertaining a load of people in suits who are just quite drunk and
who
full
want
of
to be
food
entertained.
Yeah, it's quite nice compared to Christmas gigs. I'll take that. So anyway, I'll be coming to a corporate gig near you soon. Abby Bodess will be entertaining you with Tall Tales in Waterloo and Amanda Redman will be taking over from Jeremy Paxman on University Challenge. You've proved your mettle.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So thank you very much. Thank you to lovely Laura,
Robin Perkins for joining
lovely
us.
Robin, my goodness, that was a long
feels
time
like
ago.
A week ago that,
doesn't it? Just got to spit in Lucy's face before we go.
And yes, if we could all just join together in one big spit. Thank you so much for listening. And I've just got a thing in my throat. I'm not that emotional. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next. I guess we'll see you next week.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Go, Damon. Go, Linda. Go, Papi. I might be the way everybody likes to say. I know what you're thinking about me. There might be a day you might have a certain way, but you don't have my luxuries. And it's me, I know my name, 'cause I say it proud. Everything I want.